Leah, would you go on with what you were telling us, please?
Well, I was trying to explain that we're in the business of teaching children, and I tried to make, to focus on this whenever we were in a grievance procedure. I'm not going to say that we focused on it when we were in a grievance procedure between a secretary and his or her boss or a maintenance worker, but I will say that this was the focus as far as teachers and other personnel that were in the professional group. And I think we made headway. I think principals were very happy to see grievances resolved at the first level so they didn't have to go on to assistant superintendents and arbitration. Some of them did. But really, most of them were resolved at the first level. If it was a schedule, very often the principal would say, okay, I can't change the schedule now, but maybe in February I can give you some of what you want. And the teacher was satisfied to know that, right, it was a compromise. It was a negotiation all by itself. And I found this work very rewarding, but also it took a lot of my time. I was going to grievance procedures on a fairly regular basis.
Could you tell us, as a past teacher, former teacher, excuse me, in Pittsburgh Public Schools, I vividly recall the strike of 1976. I do not recall whether or not there was a strike prior to that.
Yes, we had, we had two major strikes. One, believe it or not, was in 1967. It was a very short strike, but I think the teachers under the PFT decided that they wanted certain money awards that we were unable to give them at the time, and they went on strike, and they did come back, and it was straightened out somewhat to their satisfaction by giving them some fringe benefit programs that they wanted very much. And then life went on rather well for a while. We may have had a few day strikes or something of that kind, but nothing monumental. But we did have this large strike. It lasted for 2 months. Judge Hester was the judge in
charge
of that.
This was in 67.
Right. No. This is the big strike that you're talking about that lasted for 2 months. And it was the strike to end all strikes. I think everyone was upset with that. We hardly had time to make up the school year. We had supervisors and administrators going in to teach 12th graders so they could have enough credits to graduate. It was not a very good time in our lives. Especially was it not good for we who were negotiating, because the judge was very, very upset and said that we had to negotiate every day, Saturday, Sunday, and not leave until 10 o'clock at night. And I thought to myself, there's got to be a better way to do this. So I went to him and I explained to him that I was a practicing Jewess, that I did go to services on Saturday morning with my family, which we did. And I said, I am reformed enough that if you want me to come back in the afternoon or something like that, if it's major, I'll do that, but I won't be here on Saturday morning. So he thought that through and decided that maybe we wouldn't meet on Saturdays except in a emergency, and that it would only be fair to allow the others off on Sunday, except in an emergency. So I was very proud of that, and I think I got applause from my group because I had done that. I hadn't intended it to go that far, but I was very happy.
And with whom were you negotiating from the union?
With the PFT, with Albert Fondi. And at that time, Mr. Fondi was doing it without any attorneys. He was doing it himself. He is a very, very bright man. He is a very honorable person to work with. I do want to say that for the record. His word is his bond. And he is very professional. He has a clear understanding of what teachers should and should not be doing. And I think all of us have a great deal of respect for him.
What was the climate at the board during this time?
Not too great. The teachers were, of course, picketing. It was very hard for me to get into the board. Very often, Mr. Zunick or one of the other men who was sort of managing these pickets would have to pave the way for me so that I could go into the office. Everyone was very dejected. We really didn't see our way out of this because of all the money that the teachers were requiring or asking for at that time.
Did you have any, were there any security guards, excuse me, to help you, escort you in?
Well, we had security. We didn't have security the way it is now. We didn't have security particularly in the schools. What we had was a man in charge of security who would have various security guards go to a school where there was some difficulty. And they were at the board, and they went to those schools where the supervisors were. Also to allow the supervisors and other administrators to go into certain schools was very difficult because the pickets didn't want them to go in. So it was a very, very difficult 2 months.
Was that Stanley Rideout?
Exactly. Mr. Rideout was head of the
supervisors. As I recall, he was at Whiteman School. When there was a court injunction that forced the teachers, that supposedly used to force the teachers back to school, and some teachers did.
But it didn't last. It didn't. We kept a running record, and while some teachers who were not particularly union people and also some substitute teachers tried to get into the buildings, it didn't work out because there weren't enough of them. You just couldn't hold school, and we had to send the kids home. And this upset the parents more than if they were home already where they could make plans for them, especially if the parents were working. So it was decided to just forget about it.
I recall my son was a graduating senior at Alderdice at that
time. Oh my.
And was told that he had to watch television. Do you remember anything about
that?
Well,
that's on Channel 13. We tried, we used that in order to teach, to do some teaching. I don't know how well that went over, but it was at least we were trying. We did the best we knew how at the time, and unfortunately nothing really worked until the strike was over and everybody went back, and then we worked until June the 30th, and I think everybody was so glad that it was over that it was really very peaceful. I don't remember that we had too many problems once it was over. Everyone wanted to go back to work, and if they were dissatisfied with any part of the agreement, they let it pass. And we were very, very happy to see that ended.
Within the schools at that time, the teachers who had returned because they felt they should follow the court injunction, and the teachers that didn't, that were picketing,
mm-hmm.
It was a very bad time.
A very bad time. Yes, you're right. It was a very bad time. You would probably know more about that than I do because you were right there.
What is your what do you feel about conflict resolution? What is your perspective of it?
Well, if you're asking me how do you go about it, or if you're
asking your opinion, do you think it's effective? In with now they have it the conflict resolution within the schools, and since you had. Really, it was almost your job at that
time.
Well,
mine was grievances, hearing grievances, and I don't know how different that is from what you're telling me.
Well, when two students have a grievance.
Oh, you're talking about students who have grievances.
Yes,
that's something that was not a part of my job.
Do you have an opinion about that?
I have no problem with students coming together and discussing their problems with other students. And I have seen that very often on television. I've heard about it in other schools where a student body will hear conflicts that children have and come to some agreement about what should be done to alleviate that problem. I don't know how effective it is, but I certainly think it's a step in the right direction.
I do too. You've told us so much. What you've told us, or maybe we haven't mentioned it, what was your biggest challenge?
I guess the biggest challenge I had were the grievances, not the negotiations, because remember there was a consultant attorney that's right beside me, and while he looked to me for a lot of help, he was really great. The grievances, sitting there and trying to help principals and teachers and whomever else come to some agreement so that they could go about their job and be somewhat contented.
And the teachers had a representative from the union?
Yes.
In each grievance?
Yes, always. They never came alone. They always had a representative. I wanted to tell you, too, that I was the direct liaison between the unions and the board. That was a part of my job. I served as a clearinghouse for information on new programs for the union and changes in procedures, and I served as the main liaison between the board and the Pennsylvania Labor Relations Board because they would send us mediators to help us with our strikes and with other problems that we might have, and it was my job to let them, to call them when I needed them, inform them what the problem was, see if they could help us. And we always had a mediator when we had strikes. And of course, we did have strikes with the maintenance workers and with other groups from time to time.
What impact did the civil rights movement make at the board, as far as you were concerned?
Really, I was very proud of our board. I don't think that it had, I don't know, I can't speak about it after 1985. Mm-hmm. But before that time, I would say that we tried very, very hard to make sure that minorities had an opportunity to advance, to be hired, first of all. We often sent the recruiters to black universities, for example, to make sure that we could hire black teachers. We certainly promoted black applicants. We have many, many black principals now. I'm sure you're aware of that. And I don't think that we ever had any real crisis at the board due to that. However, I'll tell you an interesting story about our Jewish people, if you'd like to hear.
Sure.
Sometime in 1970, I think in the middle of the 1970s, the superintendent, Dr. Louis Kishkunis, told me he had met with a committee from the UJF, whose chairman was Elliot Finkel, F-I-N-K-E-L. This committee was interested in the number of Jewish administrators already on board and how many they perhaps were thinking of hiring. Now, I was very fortunate to have a number of excellent secretaries, one of whom was promoted to personnel assistant. Her name is Bernice Moskowitz, and she gleaned the records and made monthly reports. It was evident that there were just a few Jewish administrators at the board. In fact, I was the only director, and that was the highest level, until Harry Singer, who was a principal at Westinghouse, was forced to leave there. There were a number of Jewish principals at the time, but not too many. During this time, I was often asked by the director of personnel about some of the Jewish applicants, and I'm proud to say that many of them were excellent and were promoted. You have only to review the list of Jewish administrators to know this, and I'm delighted that I could be part of this project.
Well, while we're talking about that, could you contrast your early experience as a Jew in the administration office of the board with your same role during your latter years?
I always felt that I was the token Jew. I always felt that I had to present myself in the best light I possibly could. There were times I wanted to lose my temper, but I didn't. I don't have that much of a temper to begin with, thank goodness. But there were times when you get angry about something and you do feel you want to say something, and I would think to myself, how will this look? And I didn't do it. I waited a day until I could present it in a better light. Whether this is true or not true, I can't tell you. But this is how I felt. It is odd to belong to a group like Administrative Women in Education and find yourself one of the only Jews in a group of women who are professors at the universities. They are administrators in various school districts. And you come in and you see yourself as one of the few Jews that are there. And I was very proud of this organization, and I became an officer in this organization. And we helped young women who were applicants and wanted to be administrators. And I was very happy to recommend them and write letters of recommendation so they could be promoted. It was a wonderful thing that this group did. But again, I found myself as one of the few Jews in this Gentile world, so to speak. And now a few years later, now coming into the 1980s, more Jewish people came to the board to work there. A few more supervisors, there were more principals now, and I would see them, assistant directors, and this made me very happy to see this happening. And I think I relaxed. I think
you were more comfortable.
More comfortable then, that I wasn't the only one, and it was a very interesting time.
What do you think accounted for the change and for leading more Jews to administration?
I just think that they were very good, and I think they wanted them, and I think the board came to the realization too that maybe they had to have some Jewish people promoted. You just couldn't keep promoting one group and not another. And, you hear a lot of criticism about the board, and maybe they deserve some of it. But I think they're rational people and can be talked to. I really do. At least I found them that way in my time. I also wanted to tell you about something that I had to do, and about something else that I'm very proud of. My position led me to give workshops, not only for our own administrators who needed to be updated on new contracts and provisions and techniques of contract administration, but I also was invited to go to other districts. And there were teachers unionizing all over Pennsylvania, and they would look to Philadelphia and to Pittsburgh for help. So whenever someone was going to have a workshop, the superintendent would call and say, there's going to be a workshop, can you have time, you think you can go? And of course I would go. And you get awards for this. Now, of course, it's their own award, it's written on a piece of paper, but it does go into your personnel folder and letters of recommendation. But there was one award that I received that I just could hardly believe. And that was from the Executive Magazine. Now, the Executive Magazine is for school administrators. And in 1980, they decided that they would like to select a number of school executives and honor them. I don't know how they got my name. I have no idea how this came about. But I received a phone call and then a letter telling me that I had been selected as one of the people to be honored in 1980. And when you think of all the thousands of school executives in North America, that's quite an honor. And I was just blown away.
Did you ever find the person that had...
No, I have a suspicion that this group that I was telling you about of negotiators, people who negotiated, again, with consultants, the attorneys, I think that group may have been instrumental. That's what I think, but I'm not positive, because when I would say to them, did you have something to do with this? I never got a response, so I really don't know. I really don't know.
Leah, I don't know whether or not you can give us information on this, but since you are a representative from the board, perhaps you can. Going back to the civil rights movement,
mm-hmm.
And you mentioned about the hiring policy.
Oh, yes.
That came about from that. Can you also tell us something about the busing policy?
Well, the busing policy was something that was a law that was enacted, which said that as long as we were busing public school students, we had to bus private school students, which included the Catholic students as well. And I don't know if you realize or if anybody realizes how much money that costs. If we could use that money, have neighborhood schools, and use that money in the schools, I don't think we would be having all of these charter schools and all of these new programs. But that was something that was a law that was passed. We had nothing to do with that.
I recall in about 1968, 69, that children could leave their neighborhood schools, and if there was space, could attend a school of their choice, would come on public transportation, and I believe their public transportation was paid. Do you recall?
I don't recall that.
That was prior to that.
I don't recall that.
I do recall the busing.
The fact that if there was room in Whiteman School, and children from a black neighborhood wanted to come to Whiteman School, then they could be bused in.
And then, as I recall, I don't know if the term is correct, the redistricting,
mm-hmm.
that people in certain communities were told that children living on such and such a street would have to go to one school for
right.
children. And how did they determine that? Who was in charge of that?
I think the people who did the redistricting did it, because once you're in a district, you had to go to the school in that district. You couldn't go to another district. Very often we would find somebody who was some child living with a grandmother someplace instead of their parents, so that they could go to a different school, which was really foreboding. You weren't permitted to do that kind of thing.
No, I was talking about when I taught at East Hills School, that some children on some streets in East Hills School was not the home school for the East
no,
Hills
area. No, but East
area.
Hills School was a special school.
It was a
and
magnet.
That's right. And that, so all you had to do for that school was you had to go and you had to register. And if there was enough room for you, then automatically you went and you were bused. You were bused to that school. And that's true of Sterrett, for example, and has been for many, many years. The only thing they're saying is they have to have at least 50% black, 50% white. But once you have registered for that school and you're accepted, and it's through lottery that you're accepted, then you are bused to that school and you can go there.
Before there was a lottery and the magnet schools came into being, I recall that it was first come, first served.
Absolutely. Parents stayed up all night long in front of the schools in order to have, well, the board recognized that this was not a fair way to do it, and so they did away with that.
I had a question about whether during the desegregation, a lot of the issues around desegregation, whether there were specific kinds of grievances that you dealt with
no.
came out of that process?
No. They were personal grievances, but never personal grievances about race or... and I would not have handled that. If someone felt that someone was treating them unfairly, that did become a legal department problem. That's different than someone grieving a schedule or grieving because they have the wrong room or whatever that happened to be. That would not have fallen into my office.
Also, was it ever an issue during negotiations regarding the fact that the Jewish teachers had to use their personal leave days for Rosh Hashanah, the high holidays, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and that they're not the school on those days? Was it ever brought up during negotiations?
It was brought up during negotiations, yes. But at the time, I don't think the board was willing to listen to that. And so it just didn't happen.
You must have felt truly the middle man.
Yes.
In that situation.
Yes.
And hurt.
Well, yes, I was. But on the other hand, I kept hoping that if not this time, maybe next time. And I never gave up hope on that, and I was rewarded. It did happen in my time that teachers were permitted to take time off. And then, of course, then the schools were closed, so then that was no problem at all. Now, let me tell you how funny that is. Now the schools are closed, but the board isn't closed. So
oh.
There I am. And some of the other Jewish people, and we had to use our personal leave time, but that was all right. There were so few, it didn't matter. As long as the whole thing worked out, was okay.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Could you reflect on the transitions that you've seen the school district go through as Pittsburgh was also going through periods of change? Like, Pittsburgh was going through the period of change of the steel mills closing,
mm-hmm.
the poor economy, the white movement to the suburbs,
mm-hmm.
and to private schools. Cindy, do you think we should stop here again? And I'll just reiterate that question at our next session. If it's okay.
Are we going to have another session?
Okay. Well,